demonstrations.
Welcome, listeners, to WGTD HD Radio, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. I'm Linda Fleshinsky, the host for this program of Heroes in Our Midst. Sometimes I think that all of us are heroes just for surviving the years we've had with all of their ups and downs and highs and lows. I remember a guest, Lieutenant Brian Murphy, who was the first responder to the Sikh temple shooting, and he was shot a number of times, and he said, "We all have to try to endure and to come out stronger for it. We all need to be brave." This concept of surviving things was something I reflected on recently as I faced the question of attending or not attending my 50th class reunion. 50 years since leaving high school, that's a lot of endurance, and there does seem something heroic about it. And so today I have asked two women who have or are passing their 50 years since high school mark to discuss the changes, good and bad, that they have seen in that time and what they've learned from the years that they've survived. It's an honor to welcome into my studio today two guests, Linda Angel, a retired counselor, and Nancy Bauer King, a retired minister. They will be looking backward and looking forward as we consider those things that we have seen and learned and lived. Thanks to both of you for being here today. It's hard. 50 years. It's been a long time. I remember when I was in high school thinking that that must be, you know, so old. But I'm going to start with reading something by Nora Ephraim. It's short, but for our listeners, Nora Ephraim was a writer, and she died recently in the last few years at the age of 71, and she wrote things, wonderful things, like When Harry Met Sally and Sleepless in Seattle, and just she was amazing. But this is from an essay, and it's called The O Word. I'm old. I'm 69 years old. I'm not really old, of course. Really old is 80. But if you are young, you would definitely think that I'm old. No one actually likes to admit that they're old. The most that they will admit to is that they're older or oldish. In these days of physical fitness, hair dye, and plastic surgery, you can live much of your life without feeling or even looking old. But then one day, your knee goes, or your shoulder, or your back, or your hip. Your hot flashes come to an end, things droop, spots appear, your cleavage looks like a peach pit. You're 2 inches shorter than you used to be, you're 10 pounds fatter, and you cannot lose a pound of it to save your life. Your hands don't work as well as they once did, and you can't open bottles, jars, wrappers, and especially those gadgets that are encased tightly in what seems to be molded mylar. If you were stranded on a desert island and your food were sealed in plastic packaging, you would starve to death. You take so many pills in the morning that you don't have room for breakfast. The great Nora Ephraim. So for beginners, what surprises you most about being our age?
Well, when I was in high school, I remember thinking, do older people have fun? And older people meaning me, old mm-hmm. people meaning me, do they ever have fun? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, of course. It's probably a deeper, more appreciative. Mm-hmm. It's not mean. Mm-hmm. It isn't. It's a very different. But yes, mm-hmm. yes. The answer is yes. Old people have fun.
Yes, and we appreciate the joys that
yes,
we have.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
What about you? What surprises you, Nancy, about being our age?
I was surprised that it happened. I'm 75, and I ask myself, what happened? When mm-hmm. did I turn? When did I turn old? Mm-hmm. And I remember having great aunts with probably my age now, and one kept her teeth on the sink at night, and one wore a handkerchief on her head because her hair was falling out. And I thought, is that going to happen to me?
Yeah, I think teens think that that's never going to happen to them, and
right.
they wouldn't
right.
want it to happen
no.
to them. And the truth is, we still are no. joyous in some ways to be yeah. to be here.
And on Nora Ephraim's yeah. list, I could check off about 14 of those things.
I know. Couldn't we all? The things we didn't know would ever
right.
happen to us.
We adapt to things better
mm-hmm.
too.
Yes,
and we accept age.
Yes.
Better than we would have at that time. If
right.
at that time
right.
we would have had the aches and pains
right.
that we have now,
right.
sitting in the doctor's office all the time.
Yeah.
Right.
And when I look back and reflect, I think what's better for women today, and what's not so good. And maybe you could each mention some things that you think are better for women today.
choice. We have more choices. Career, for instance. More women are in math and sciences and technologies and things that I don't think I ever thought of when I was in high school. I thought of teaching, nursing, et cetera.
Yeah, I was thinking of just family planning. My fourth child was born in 1963, and I think the bill came out about that time.
Well, that kind of jumps me forward to a question I was going to ask later, but our book club read Gail Collins' book, When Everything Changed, The Amazing Journey of American Women from 1960 to the Present. And your comment, Linda, about young people, I just wonder if they realize that the career choices that were open to us, that they were not that are open to them, excuse me, were not open to us. Remember, help wanted male, help wanted female?
Yes.
When I've had graduating seniors on this radio program to talk after we're done, I usually say, do you know that was the case, that we couldn't be all these things, firefighters and police officers and even doctors or lawyers? It was much harder.
I remember being turned down for a job at a bank because I had children, and that's what they said. You have two young children, so it would be too big of a risk for us to hire you. I was qualified in every other way, but I had two children.
It's amazing that they could even just say that. I mean,
at that time, they could.
They could. And I think we have some responsibility to tell young girls and young boys that that's how it was.
In, well, 1953, I was told I could be a minister's wife.
If you want to be a minister.
But not a pastor. And the United Methodist Church started ordaining women in the full elder's orders. There's some jargon here, but they started ordaining them in 1956. And I didn't catch on until in the 80s. I went to seminary in 1982 at 42 years old.
And you ended up in a very non-traditional career yet at that time. Mm-hmm. Now there are many women ministers.
There's a lot of United Methodist women clergy now. Still not real accepted in certain places.
Yes, that's true. If, you know, I wanted to go to medical school, and even though I was a good student and, you know, people didn't want that, and there are plenty of women my age who are MDs, but now the, like you pointed out, the medical schools are 50% women. So, but it was just a whole range of careers that weren't available to us. Right. It was amazing. I want to go back to the pill comment for a minute, too, because Gail Collins sort of, you know, says in her book that the pill is really what made the difference. In what way? How did the pill make so much of a difference for women?
They had choices with, as Linda said, choice over whether they were going to have children or not.
And spacing children and also, I think, sexual activity. I think that big fear, there's no way I was going to have sex. I wasn't going to get caught being pregnant, you know. And
And it kind of killed the stereotype that was very prevalent at the time that sex was really a male thing and women just did it because they had to work.
Well, it opened up the work options then also for women because they didn't have to stay. They could choose not to have children, which meant that they could follow a career without the danger of having.
It was so liberating, and that's another thing I don't know if young women really realize, because they've always had the ability to kind of control whether they have children or not.
Right.
And that's kind of huge. What do you think is worse for women today?
The same, actually, the career. I think women are still, if they have a full-time job, still expected to do a lot of the things that women normally did, the housework and so forth.
So it's kind of a double whammy that you're expected to have a career, but then you're expected
That may be changing. I hear more talk about stay-at-home dads and, you know, sharing household jobs.
But and fathers are tons better, both at being fathers emotionally, but also in changing diapers and doing the dish, emptying the dishwasher.
I also think that there's laws that say you cannot discriminate
Yes.
But there are ways of getting around it, and I think that happens. And that's really frustrating now because we know that we can do these things, but yet we're still kind of held down a little bit. And back then, we didn't have those expectations or those hopes as much. So I think there's a little more frustration.
And I think we're having maybe a little bounce back as far as the sexualizing of women, because I think when the women's movement happened, women wanted to be portrayed more professionally and seriously. And is there a bounce back right now that it's kind of going the other way? Or?
I don't know.
Some of the politicians think so.
They will go nameless.
My mom used to say this. She said, you know, as I get older, she said, my body, you know, does all these things that we do when we get old. And she said, but I still feel like the same person inside. And do you think that that's true of you? Do you think that you're still, you've just been changed over the years by some things, but you're still basically the same person?
I'm still trying to find out who I am.
I think basically, but I also think there have been some improvements as far as tolerance and patience and some of those things, I think, come with age.
There is a lot that does get better, and I think we're more appreciative as we get older.
And I'm happier. I have a lighter spirit. When Linda mentioned having more fun, definitely I have more fun. I can entertain myself. When I was younger, I had anxiety and worried, and now it's my body may be wearing out, but my spirit is getting lighter, and it's just better. I like it now.
I do too. I think I used to worry more about fitting in, and now I don't. This is me. Take it or leave it. You know, I really don't have those anxieties and worries about that.
And I get to be with the people I want to be with.
Yes, that's another thing we choose. I'm probably the only one here who went to my 50th class reunion. This is what all we'll say about it. But I felt like I had gone to a couple other before, only because people asked me to. I'm not a big reunion person. But I did go to the 50th. And it's funny, there was that sort of relaxed atmosphere. I mean, nobody was... I don't know why. It just had a different feel about it. Like nobody wondered what you're doing and if you're successful. It was just sort of, oh, my gosh. You know, I haven't seen you in all these years, and you look so good. And people did look good and kind of happy, I think. There's another thing from Nora Ephron that I loved. But she talks about a singer by the name of Edith Piaf, who was famous for singing a song called, I don't speak French, but Non Je Ne Regret Rien. In other words, I don't regret anything. And she writes, it's a good song. I know what she meant. I can get into it. I can make the case that I regret nothing. After all, most of my mistakes turned out to be things I survived or turned into funny stories or on occasion even made money from. But the truth is, je regret beaucoup. In other words, I regret a lot. What do you find in that balance? Do you have things that you look back and regret? You don't have to specifically say what, but where's that balance between regret and understanding who you were when you made mistakes?
Yeah, I regret a lot. And I tell myself that I did the best I could at the time.
I do that as well, and because everything's new. So you don't have a book to follow to tell you how to do anything. Parenting, for instance, you know, I would parent different now than when I did then. And I was a young parent. I was 20 when I started parenting. So, you know, I would do that, even though the kids turned out fine. But
You wouldn't get a helicopter.
I have regrets, too. But, you know, I remember something else that my mom said was, you know, if you look back and when you were raising kids and all the times you intended, you meant to be doing the right things and you focused on your kids, and you then you can't you know, say afterwards, well, maybe if I hadn't done this or that. And I thought that was really good advice. And she also said, for our young mothers out there, she said, when your kids are little, just enjoy it. Just enjoy it so much, because those years go so fast.
Okay.
Were you going to add something?
Nope.
Okay.
Like, not fast enough.
Now, something else we should say for our young listeners, I think, if we have young listeners here. But do you guys remember the ERA in 1977?
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Tell our listeners about that.
Well, the first name comes to mind is Phyllis Schlafly.
Yes. Yes.
Just let me do a little background here. The ERA was the Equal Rights Amendment, and it went to all the states to vote on it, and it did not pass. What it simply said is you will not discriminate against anyone based on their gender. I that's probably not the exact wording, but that was the gist of it. And a lot of women voted against it, and
that's
I was
right.
young. I mean, I was in college, I guess. And I remember thinking, why would women vote against it? What do you think about that whole thing? Why did that happen?
That women voted against it?
Mm-hmm. And that it didn't pass?
Well, the thing I can think of is back when I was going into seminary, that the church that I belonged to had to have a vote whether to vote for me to continue or not. And the vote was 154 for me to go ahead, and 8 against. And the 8 against were all women.
Mm-hmm.
And the women, this was 1981 or 82, the women were worried about what was going to happen to my husband.
Your poor husband.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's
and
amazing.
And I think that's that right. was what was going on. What's going to happen to the men?
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think people feared family, you know, what's going to happen to kids.
Right.
And there were a lot of women who felt women's lib was a dirty word.
That's right. And the burning bras
yes.
they pointed to, was,
yes.
which was just a symbolic thing to
exactly.
say we have to be free of a lot of the constraints mm-hmm. we have. But.
And that we would have to go into combat.
Oh, yes. Yeah. They talked about that a
and
lot.
And we would have to have unisex toilets.
Yeah,
which we do
that.
Now anyway.
Isn't that funny? Not many, though. But, I mean, the scare things that come up when something
mm-hmm,
like
yeah.
that is happening is just amazing. I remember my mom saying that she didn't think women should be firefighters because if her house was burning and somebody had to carry her down a ladder, she wanted it to be a big, strong man.
So, I mean, remember telling my father about the story that I didn't get hired because I had kids.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, my father felt that women in the workforce took jobs away from men.
Yep.
And really believed I should be happy to be a stay-at-home mom.
Yep. And something I don't think young women would know about or remember is there were tons of talk shows with a woman on who says women should stay home. And that's the Phyllis Schlafly reference, by the way, which is funny because I think she ended up being a lawyer or something. But and the women who would say, you know, your children won't turn out if you go to work all the time. And then the women who would say, you know, we should have careers and why can't we get help with the children? And that was a really huge
mm-hmm.
shift.
I think that still goes on.
It still
I think,
goes on?
I still think there's that women who have children and everything have that struggle or that angst about staying home with their children or,
mm-hmm.
or working. And
do you guys think, back to the career thing for a minute, would you have made a different choice or did you sort of end up in a good place with your careers if everything had been open to you?
I think I would have been a writer.
Oh. Nancy's a wonderful writer. You are a writer.
writer and or artist. I would have gone into fine arts.
Uh-huh.
And my father refused to allow me to take art courses in high school. I had to take the pre-college math and science and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I do remember, but all I really wanted at that time was I wanted to get married and have babies.
Mm-hmm.
And I did,
mm-hmm.
and I was a stay-at-home mom, worked part-time jobs or something, but for the most part, stay-at-home mom until the kids were
mm-hmm.
older, and then I went to college, and I felt at that time then I could pretty much do what I wanted.
Right.
I chose the family
mm-hmm.
therapy.
And both of you are a very good fit for what you ended up doing, minister and counselor. But you do wonder if you had been encouraged as girls to be able to go into anything, what would have happened. And, as, you know, my daughter's balancing a career, our older daughter, with of being an MD with having three kids, and it works out beautifully. But I'm going to switch to a little serious subject here, because one of the things that gets sadder as you get older is photo albums and obituaries. And I just want to reflect for a minute on this, and I'm going to read this. Meanwhile, there's a conversation about CAT scans and MRIs. Everywhere you look, there's cancer. Once a month, there's some sort of bad news. Once a month, there's a funeral. You lose close friends and discover one of the worst truths of old age. They're irreplaceable. I love that line, that everybody you love is irreplaceable. People who run 4 miles a day and eat only nuts and berries drop dead. People who drink a quart of whiskey and smoke 2 packs of cigarettes a day drop dead. You are suddenly in a lottery, the ultimate game of chance, and someday your luck will run out. Everybody dies. There's nothing you can do about it, whether you eat 6 almonds a day or not. That's, again, Nora Ephraim. But death, it's the big equalizer, I guess, and it is true that we lose people before the end, and that's one of the hardest things.
Right.
It's pretty natural, and I do admit I go to a lot more funerals now than I used to, and it used to creep me out, the idea of going to a funeral and seeing that, and it doesn't anymore. Mm-hmm. It's, again, that acceptance.
That acceptance. Mm-hmm. And a very real realization, I think, that we didn't have when we were young, that we die. I think you kind of, other people die, old people die. Mm-hmm. But it's a sad part of this journey, I think.
And I know some people who are worn out. And oftentimes someone very old will say, I'm ready. They're worn out.
Could you just reflect for a minute on the following? Something that surprises me in life is friendships. Friendships when we're older.
What do you want? Linda, how do you
I'll
want?
Reflect on this. Yes.
They're deeper, I think.
I think
they're more intimate. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I don't think we worry about what we look like to the other person and how we appear. I think we're more tolerant and accepting. And
I think, you know, when our kids were little, we had 4 kids, had the baby when our oldest was 8. So it was so busy with them for so many years, and then I volunteered at the schools, and I didn't think a lot about friendship then. I think I had friends loosely because we volunteered at school and we did the fairs together or whatever. But as I get older, I think friendships are just more important than they ever were and more meaningful, to the point you made. And I think it's not like light, loose friends. It's the people you really care about. It's deep.
Last Monday, 4 of my high school friends just coincidentally came for lunch, and there was something important about being with people who knew me as a kindergartner, and still all those years are still friends, although we don't see each other very much, but there is a long-lasting kind of friendship. Mm-hmm. And then there are short-term. I've met a couple people in the writing group that I'm in that are becoming really good friends. Uh-huh. And like Linda said, intimate and honest. Mm-hmm. There's some integrity about the friendship.
I have a very dear friend that I met as a very young woman, and before either of us were married, and we still see each other every week. And it's been wonderful sharing our lives together, our, you know, births, deaths, trials and tribulations and happinesses. And it's wonderful, and it is deeper and better now than it was even then. And I thought it was good then.
I thought maybe it'd say sharing recipes.
We did. We yes, still do. Everything. We still do. I wrote her a little story one time about sitting around my kitchen table because we used to coffee click so much. And she would come over and have coffee and bring the kids, and our kids would play together, et cetera. And I wrote that because it just seemed such an important time as I look back now.
Yes.
Then we might have thought, oh, we should be doing housework or something. Right. But no, I look back
You're lost in the bustle of it all when your kids are younger. Right. And
those coffee clutches were survival modes they were. For me.
Yes. And I think, too, you sometimes share with friends stories that you don't. Might not even share with your children. And sometimes I think your friends know you better than your own children do.
And don't judge you.
Yep, and don't judge you. what do you think that you would advise the younger you if you could go back and advise the younger you? Are there things you would advise them? I think, like my mom said, enjoy the moment and enjoy the time.
And not to let fear guide your life.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was afraid of a lot, and if I do that, or what would it look like, or many things. Uh-huh. It seemed to be fear-driven oftentimes, some of my decisions.
Yeah. Do you have a bucket list? Are there things you still want to make sure you did?
Clean up the house and throw out all sorts of detritus that's around.
Are there any things you'd still like to do?
I was serious.
Yeah.
I don't, nothing big, just kind of taking each day.
And
we're at the age, too, where we can pretty much do what we want to do. Finances aren't as tight as they were when raising little ones, et cetera. And
And I think it sort of goes with our whole feeling here. And I think when you talk to people who are getting older, they say the same things that you guys have said here today, is that just a time of more peace. I was listening to NPR the other day, and they had this study on that said that older people struggle with depression in great numbers and have a lot of problems, and they're sort of at a slump in their life. And it was so funny because it was a call-in show, and everybody who called in seemed to be around in their 60s or so, or maybe older. And they all said, I'm having the best time of my life. I don't have as many worries. I really appreciate my friends. We travel. And so I don't know. Are both things true, do you think?
Well, it depends on your health, I think, at that age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If they were in their 60s, they're a lot younger than I am right now. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy things.
Right. I do, too. And I think some people have just suffered many losses.
Yes.
And with many losses, of course, will come depression and everything. But I like the idea of not sucking my stomach in.
It is what it is. That's a good, motto for old age. It is what it is.
You bet.
Well, I can't believe how fast this time came. We could talk for an hour, but I'm going to end. I usually read something at the end, so I'm going to end with something from my book. Growing older, they say, is not for the faint of heart. I understand the wisdom of that more and more as the years go by. There is so much that is difficult about it. Aching joints you never knew you had, a mind that forgets things that it shouldn't, and eyes that don't see as clearly as they once did. Although some of that is a blessing, the poignant irony of your vision weakening just as the wrinkles begin to line your face. Yet for all the negatives of growing older, and there are many, there are gifts as well. One of the best, I think, is that we know ourselves better. We look back and we see things more clearly. We see our mistakes and our successes, and we realize how hard we have been trying all along. We're more comfortable with who we are than we've been and where we've been. And we understand that while we didn't accomplish all that we wanted to, we didn't do so badly either. It's been a good journey. And so that ultimate gift of aging, that gift of finally knowing who we are, comes in handy as time passes. We comprehend the beauty of a strong friendship. We marvel in the younger generation moving forward with hope and promise and future in their faces. And we know with a gentle self-acceptance that we are who we are, idiosyncrasies and all. I'd like to thank our guests today, retired counselor Linda Angel and retired minister Nancy Bauer-King, for taking time to share with our listeners your reflections on living and learning and growing, for your profound thoughts, your humor, and for being with us today. I thank you.
You're welcome.
And finally, thanks to you, our listeners, for sharing with us your time this Saturday morning. I'm Linda Fleshensky, and we hope that you go online at WGTD.org to hear this and other of our Heroes programs, and that you will tune in to WGTD.